Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, most people believe that the advent of private military companies is a phenomenon of the 1990s. It's not, and more about that later. However, events of the 1990s have generated a huge debate as to the role, organisation, structure, ownership, legitimacy and morality of those companies. Hundreds of thousands of column inches have been written, one or two of them about me. And if you monitor some of the chat rooms on this subject on the internet, you will find that a huge army of pundits has grown up around this issue, who have little or no clue of the realities of what they're talking about. That is not to say that curiosity and debate is not healthy. I welcome it, or I wouldn't be here today. But I do wish that a little less emotion and more clarity of thought would be applied to discussing this subject. I've been asked to set the scene, and so I intend to cover some key areas and perhaps toss one or two pebbles into the pond in order to provoke a launching, or to provide a launching pad and to provoke discussion. I intend to look at where the industry was before Iraq, where it is now, and where it might go in the future. First, a bit of background. Well, where did all this come from? Most people believe that it started with executive outcomes and Sandline. Not so. The East India Company, much later on, WatchGuard, David Sterling's private company, KMS, Airworks in the United Kingdom, in the United States, Dyncorp and others had been around for some considerable time. What was Air America if it was not a private military company? However, the whole business was thrown into sharp focus by the Arms to Africa Fair in 1998. It was not the first time that private military companies had made a splash in the papers. KMS operations in Nicaragua and Sri Lanka and some of David Sterling's escapades had also made the Sunday papers. What Arms to Africa did was to draw together a number of strands. Firstly, was this a legitimate business, and therefore, was there a real role for private military companies on the global stage? And of course, it brought into question the whole business of regulation. It highlighted the need to intervene against barbaric and unconstitutional behaviour, whether by government, the United Nations, the private sector, or a combination, something that had been sadly lacking in Rwanda. Arms to Africa was a milestone. The second major milestone, of course, is Iraq. And before I look at Iraq, a word about semantics, and it's already been raised in the beginning of this debate today. Titles, or what I prefer to call the alphabet soup that surround this industry. I think the majority of companies represented in this room, a number of whose senior executives will speak later today, would I think refer to their companies as private security companies or some other such title, as opposed to private military companies. Whose senior executives will speak later today, would I think refer to their companies as private security companies or some other such title, as opposed to private military companies. My company, Aegis, describes itself as a risk management company. People tend to shy away from the PMC title because since it has been coined, the title or the word military has the connotation in some people's eyes of offensive action or a more polite way of saying mercenaries. However, a large proportion of the private sector is represented here today speaking under the headline of PMCs. And I think that that indicates what was referred to earlier on, a blurring of definitions and a merging of tasks. And I think that the tasks are more important, or the roles of these companies, than their titles. All the companies represented in this room are carrying out some sort of military-style task in Iraq, those that are there. In military parlance, they are force multipliers. Because if they weren't there as a protective security force, there would need to be a lot more troops. More about this in a minute. What is clear is that whatever title you use, PMC, PSC, RMC, MSC, etc., etc., the private security sector, in some form or another, have evolved into important actors on the world stage with a valid and effective role to play. Now let's look at Iraq. The general estimate produced by the multinational force in Iraq is generally believed to be about 20,000 private security operators working in Iraq. It may be a little more or a little less. I don't believe the figure's entirely accurate. But that equates to the manpower of about three brigades. And note that I said manpower, not combat power. For the uninitiated, these companies that are largely British and American, supported by our Iraqi colleagues, although many nationalities are represented within those companies, carry out the following roles: close protection, convoy escort, key point protection, command, control, communications and intelligence, civil affairs, military training, and heliborne security operations. There's quite a military flavour, as you can see. More about that again in a minute. Companies started by seizing the opportunity brought about by security requirements that was perceived to be necessary in post-conflict Iraq. I don't think anyone foresaw the extended period of counterinsurgency or the scale on which the private sector would be involved, nor did they foresee the integration that would occur between the private sector, the military, and government. What has emerged now is not only a commercial bonanza for the sector, but a clear demonstration of the role and value of companies involved. Whatever title you may choose to apply or adopt, gone are the Lone Star Cowboys, those wearing black from their piratical bandanas to their steel-tipped cowboy boots. Anyone observing the entrance to the CPA this time last year could have produced a wonderful photo reportage for the fashion pages of Soldier of Fortune magazine. Joking aside, what has evolved is a competent, professional force which contributes significantly to reconstruction, some aspects of counterinsurgency, and protective security, which covers the capability gaps of the military, is certainly cheaper than deploying formations of troops, and contributes significantly to the evolving future of Iraq. Companies are involved in working for the Department of Defense, the Department of State, the Project and Contracting Office, the United Kingdom Government, other members of the Diplomatic Corps, and almost all Iraqi ministries. They guard commercial companies, protect infrastructure, guard ministers and judges and other high-value targets, and work very closely with all elements of the multinational force in Iraq. In general, companies that have lasted the course, and some of us who are newer to the game, work together, almost. But it is coming. My company's role is to coordinate military activity and reconstruction activity and to provide an intelligence service to other private security companies that wish to take it up. The companies have their own council, which debates issues and problems and how best to deal with them. A group of companies have contributed to the funding of an official representative or liaison officer to the Iraqi government, Lawrence Peter, who's here today. And incidentally, Lawrence Peter, when advising the Ministry of Interior in CPA days, did much to galvanize the companies to cooperate and gain official recognition for their work. I just want to show you two slides to give you a feel of the scale of the private sector's involvement in Iraq. That slide schematically shows the players, if you like, or most of them. I've forgotten the diplomatic corps from that slide, but I think you get the feel that on the left-hand side is the military, in the center is the reconstruction effort, on the right are is the Iraqi government and their infrastructure, and then other key players. Just to give you a feel of where the private security or private military sector, depending which title you wish to choose, is involved in Iraq, the blue stars you're going to see next indicate private sector involvement. So you can see it's pretty widespread and pretty impressive in terms of what it provides to support the military, the reconstruction, the diplomatic efforts, the government, etc., etc. The threat in Iraq is considerable, and all the companies there have lost individual employees. Much good work is being done, and these companies then, and I won't give you a catalogue of the names, they're all or mostly represented here, private military companies, or are titles unimportant? What is important is what they represent and the work they're doing. What the involvement of the private sector in Iraq represents is an evolution of the sector, which in my view will continue to evolve and develop and become more significant in the future. So what of the future? I think that the security companies are probably not, or the ones that I'm referring to and the ones that are represented here, are not private military companies as people generally understand the meaning of the term. The term PMC implies offensive military action, working at the behest of a sovereign government, unilaterally, or in conjunction with government forces. I have done both, and I have changed my perception. I think the day of the PMC in that particular role has changed. And it's changed largely because of the situation that we find ourselves in the world. Situations such as Iraq, the advent of the global war on terror, and an almost universal threat faced by government and the commercial sector alike. Governments are much more likely to use military force as a matter of course post 9/11 than they were prepared to do before. Do I see private military companies conducting offensive military operations? The answer to that question is no. The world has moved on. Do I see the private sector continuing to be involved alongside the military as force multipliers in such places as Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere? Yes, I always have. I recently looked at my notes for a lecture, or a series of lectures I gave in 1999, one to the Oxford Union and one to the Military College of Science at Shrivenham, and in both I highlighted this role, and I'm just going to read you a quote from that period of time, which may sound familiar to you. Even when national forces are involved, there will still be a useful supporting role for PMCs, not least in relieving the national forces of time and troop-absorbing routine tasks, guarding convoys and vital installations, repatriation of prisoners, caring for refugees, clearing rear areas. They could also handle the numerous post-conflict tasks, bridging the gap between the ending of conflict and the re-establishment of peace and normality. Other duties could include mine clearance, food distribution, restoration of utilities, repairs to infrastructure, running ports and airfields. There is a vast amount of first world military and professional experience out there which PMCs have the training and experience to deploy and which governments should be eager to utilize. Do I think companies will ever work for the United Nations as an intervention force? A question that's often posed about PMCs. Probably not, but you never know. But for the UN, there is for the UN, a role similar to those that the companies are using in Iraq, certainly yes. I have not discussed regulation, and I don't want to steal other people's thunder, as I know it's going to be discussed in detail later. But I think regulation will come, it must come, and I fully support it, whether it be government-imposed or self-regulation. We've heard from the ICRC this morning, they will wish to be involved in this. In my view, it already exists, certainly in the United Kingdom, or certainly for United Kingdom companies. That is regulation by adherence to the rule of international and national law, commercial regulation by contract obligation, and by such government regulation as the DTI, trafficking and broking regulations. Regulation also exists in the United States and South Africa, and companies working in Iraq, as you've heard, are governed by specific regulations such as CPO Memo 17. As an industry, we should welcome oversight and regulation, not shy away from it. It helps further legitimize the industry and clarifies grey areas, of which there are a lot. As to the morality of this work, I've never had a problem with it. I don't think there is anything wrong with people who are doing a valuable job of work in dangerous conditions, being paid properly, equipped properly, and insured properly. It is the same for a security operative, in my view, as it is for a doctor or an airline pilot. In summary, I would make 5 points. The private security sector has evolved and is evolving into a mature relationship with not only its traditional market, the commercial sector, but also government and the military. The skills and requirements will also evolve, and some of these will have a military flavour. Regulation in one form or another is necessary and welcome. The industry has proved itself with its dedicated professionalism, brave people in the face of significant and real threat, and has carved a proper place in the global order. And I would conclude by saying the industry, in my view, is here to stay. Thank you.
Tim, thank you very much indeed. We now come to about 15 minutes for questions. And you'll see from your programme notes, I think, that this question period is without attribution, Michael, by which we mean that the Chatham House rule applies to the questions and answers which we're about to go into. Once again, could you please stand, say who you are, wait for the microphone to arrive before you start saying who you are, and keep your questions short and to the point, please. Over here.
Hello, I'm Robert Young Pelton. I'm writing a book about the industry. Mr. Spicer, could you confirm or deny that you briefed Jack Straw on the events of the Equatorial Guinea coup before it happened and what your involvement was with that?
I'm not really going to discuss it.
So
you read
won't
the Sunday
comment.
Papers.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There had to be one.
In the middle here.
Tobias Lal, 9th Wealth Lancers. I've just come back from commanding a garrison in Iraq, and under my command, I had 450 members from a private security company. Firstly, I'd like to state that, in my opinion, the growth of private military companies is a direct result of the shrinking of the UK